Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.
You're listening to Red Leg Nation Radio, the official podcast of RedLegNation.com. Hello there, Reds fans. Welcome back to yet another thrill-packed edition of the Red Leg Nation Radio podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. Thanks again for joining us today. On demand from Red Leg Nation World Headquarters. Got several things to discuss here today, and should be an interesting program. Hope so, anyway. In just a moment, our buddy Bill Lack is going to be speaking with Logan Parker of the Carolina Mudcats, Reds AA affiliate, one of our spotlight players at RedLegNation.com. Get an update from him through midway through the season here after two and a half months, and get his thoughts on the way things are going so far in 2009. First, though, as I said, there's several items to discuss. I think that we ought to at least touch on in the podcast here. The first of those has sort of been the continuing saga of Joey Votto. Joey, of course, is just he's been out now for a while, and we all sort of feel bad for him. Don't really know what's going on. It's been kept under wraps a little bit, but in the last couple of days, maybe there's some maybe a glimmer of hope, I guess is the way to put it, that Joey Votto may be back in the Reds lineup soon. And goodness gracious, do we need him back in the lineup. Just lost the third game to the Nationals, scored a total of about negative six runs in the whole series, and somehow won two out of three, you know, thanks to the Nationals. Washington Nationals, good for what ails you. I'm telling you, that bunch is terrible. The worst pitching staff in the majors, but still the Reds could barely score a run. And part of that reason, Frank, is that Joey Votto's not in the middle of that lineup, and another guy we're going to talk about in just a moment, Edwin Encarnacion, not in the lineup. It's tough. What are you going to do? Dusty Baker's trying his best to hold this crew together, but it's easier said than done with the injuries and the fact that the Reds are so thin, frankly. Not a lot of depth right now in the Reds organization. I can see that changing over the next couple of years. Got a lot of guys coming up through the organization that can provide some depth, but right now the Reds are still a little bit thin. Specifically about Joey Votto, John Fay in the Cincinnati Inquirer had a note the other day, and he talked to Dusty Baker about Votto. Dusty seems to have a couple of different comments every day about Joey, and frankly, as I said, the last few days they've been somewhat encouraging. Recently he said that Joey's doing everything he can to get back here. He said the game waits for nobody. You got to carry on till that person gets back. But then said that Joey Votto is better, getting better, and he can tell by talking to him, tell by his voice, that he's feeling much better. So we'll have to take his word for that. Nobody else has talked to Joe. He's been kind of hidden behind the scenes a little bit and not willing to talk to any media or anyone about what's going on with him. And you can't blame him for that. Let him deal with it in his own way. We just want him to get healthy, get back on the field as soon as possible. The next item for discussion, I guess, is another ongoing saga, really, as it pertains to the Reds, and that's Edwin Encarnacion. Now, Edwin, of course, has been out for a long time now. Barely even had him in the lineup this year, seems like, with that wrist. And, you know, it started to look like, I said we're getting excited that Joey Votto may be close to coming back. Well, there last week it looked like Edwin Encarnacion might be on his way back. He'd been taking batting practice. He looked like he was on the verge of being sent out for a rehab assignment in the minor leagues. I'm going to get a chance to go watch Carolina Mudcats play next weekend, so I was kind of hoping that Edwin would be there. Maybe Joey Votto will be there if he goes out on a rehab assignment, as they're expecting him to do. Maybe I'll get to see one of those guys. But either way, you know, Edwin had been taking batting practice, and I thought he might be close. Well, he's had a setback, had to go get another MRI, and now he's hoping to be able to begin swinging the bat again this weekend. He's still not swinging a bat again. And the quote from Edwin sounds exactly like what you'd expect from him. John Fay says, he's clearly frustrated with his left hand and wrist. Edwin says, I wait 1 month and then I have pain again. I love baseball. I want to play. It's hard to watch the game from the bench. Edwin did want to make the point that he wasn't all the way back at square one. He wasn't a complete setback. He says he just has a little bit of inflammation. But, hey, Edwin, we love baseball too. Edwin, we want you to play. At least most of us do. I certainly do. And it's hard to watch the game without you in the lineup and without Joey Votto in the lineup and with Jay Bruce struggling mightily at the plate, hopefully coming out of that a little bit, but as he's shown in this national series. But, goodness, this offense, what are we going to do? I'm really amazed that the Reds are as close as they are right now in the standings with this offense. Just it's putrid. It's terrible. This offense stinks, as we say in the Titanic struggle recaps at redlegnation.com just about every night, unfortunately. And, you know, who do you blame? You know, Votto and Edwin are out. I don't know how much blame there is to throw around. This team is who they are. You know, we expected they weren't going to have much of an offense. The pitching has kept them in the race, frankly, up through the middle of June. Pitching's been outstanding. Not one qualm. I take that back. There's one problem with the pitching, and that's Mike Lincoln, who is just – he has been a disaster. And you feel bad for the guy. You watch him out there pitching, and you can tell. He's trying as hard as he can. He really wants to do well, and it's like he's lost. That's the look that I see on his face. And I've often cautioned people don't go extrapolating from what you see on somebody's face as to what they're actually thinking. But that's the look. It's like he doesn't know what's wrong. He doesn't know why he's not pitching he was at least adequate last year. Why he's not pitching like that? He came in the game the other night, gave up that home run, first pitch against the Cubs that caused the Reds to lose that game. And it just, you feel bad for the guy. But his ERA is 9 runs a game. It's terrible. At some point, they've got to do something. They've got to, you know, I say send him to AAA. Now, obviously, that's easier said than done. In order to send him down to AAA Louisville, he doesn't have any minor league options. Matter of fact, the Reds, in all their infinite wisdom, signed him to a 2-year contract before the season, a 2-year major league contract. So to send him down, they'd have to expose him to waivers. And frankly, I don't care. Expose him to waivers. Two options there that would result from that. If he's exposed to waivers, probably, my guess is, ain't nobody in the world going to claim him. Who'd want him? At this point. So I would be very surprised if anyone claimed him, first of all. And, of course, if no one claims him, then the Reds can designate him to Louisville and bring someone else up. Now, the next thing is, what if he's exposed to waiver and someone does claim him? Again, my answer there is, so? I think it's a risk that the Reds should take. If someone grabs him, well, more power to him. Let them take on his contract for next year at least. If no one does claim him, then we got him in AAA, and maybe he can get things straightened out. There's a possibility. Frankly, he wasn't that good last year. He had a good stretch in June or July, and the rest of the season was pretty, mediocre or worse. And this year, it's just been a disaster from day one. If someone else claims him, great. If he goes and pitches somewhere else, well, that's a chance you take, I think, in order to improve the ball club. And right now, the Reds really should try to get somebody up here that can pitch out of the bullpen. Really, he's the only weak link in the bullpen at this point. Arthur Rhodes continues to pitch magnificently. Nick Massett, wow. Nick Massett's just been unbelievable. Lights out the whole season. And, Daniel Ray Herrera had a rough go of it tonight. But he's pitched well. They got some arms out there in that bullpen. Coco Cordero, Francisco Cordero. He blew the save against the Nationals in the second game of that series. But, you know, it's first blown save of the year. He's had a good year. I've got no complaints about Coco at this point. So the pitching staff is solid. The offense right now, 2 weeks into June, even though we're hanging around the first place, really, you know, just a couple games back, the offense, I don't see how we can continue to stay in the race with this offense the way it is. Of course, I've been saying that for 2 months, so, you can take what I tell you and $1.25 and you might be able to get you a cup of coffee somewhere. But that's about it. That's what my opinion's worth. But what do you guys think? We're talking about it constantly at RedLegNation.com. You think the Reds can really hang in there with an offense like this? And with Dusty, and I do give Dusty credit for sort of holding this team together through all this mess, and I don't want to heap too much blame on him for anything. But, you know, you do have to point to his lineup construction as one reason why the Reds are struggling scoring. This week, Jerry Hairston Jr. has been leading off with Willie Taveras batting second, which is just crazy. I mean, just insane, frankly. I don't know where Dusty, what he's thinking. Well, he tried to explain what he's thinking in the paper. This morning. Dusty said it's temporary. Willie missed some time. He was struggling a little bit before. He's struggling even more since he's been back. That is the understatement of the century. Willie Taveras has not gotten a hit since, like, I think the Eisenhower administration, somewhere thereabouts. But then Dusty says, Willie's my leadoff man. Sometimes you got to make a change because when the leadoff man ain't getting on base, he ain't no leadoff man. When he's getting on base, there's a lot happening. So since he's not getting on base as a leadoff man, what does Dusty and all his brilliance do? Why, drop him to second in the order, of course. I think Dusty misunderstands the point that the reason you don't want these low OBP guys up near the top of the order is because they're getting ready to hit in front of the guys that are supposed to be your run producers. Batting him first or second, either one, you're still in front of these big guys, and you're sort of defeating the purpose there. So I think maybe Dusty Baker just is a little confused about that. But what does he do, though? Besides dropping Taveras to number two, he puts Jerry Hairston Jr. in the leadoff spot. Now, Jerry Hairston Jr., he is... I like having him around. Let's say that. He's a good guy off the bench to have. He plays a lot of positions, and, you know, he's not going to kill you at any of them. He's not outstanding at any of them, but he's not going to kill you at any of those positions either. He's adequate, certainly as a fill-in. As a hitter, his whole career, he's had, you know, he had one good, basically half a season last year in his entire career. That's all he's had. And, of course, he has sort of used that to convince Dusty to play him every single day. He's a guy that gets exposed when you play him every day. He's a guy I like having on the team. I'm not trying to attack Jerry Hairston here. Jerry Hairston's a guy I like having around, but he just gets exposed if you play him too much. He's not an everyday player. And so now at this time, we've got Jerry Hairston Jr. leading off, Willie Taveras batting second. Both of them have on-base percentages below 300. Think about that. The two guys that you are counting on to get on base to set the table for the run, so-called run producers, and that's a whole other issue for a whole different podcast about whether these guys are actually a bunch of run producers without Joey Votto and Edwin Encarnacion, but you got two guys with OBPs below 300 leading off. And that just that blows my mind that Dusty can think that's a good thing. And it's not like it's just these guys are having a bad start to the season, and that's why they have low on-base percentages. I mean, that's part of it. They're not the... Jerry Hairston had a hot stretch earlier. Willie Taveras had a hot stretch earlier, but overall they're playing pretty poorly early on. But the numbers are not out of line with their career numbers is what's scary about it. So, you know, I'm not sure what quite is going through Dusty Baker's head at this point, hitting those two guys at the top of the order. And then meanwhile, you got a guy, Chris Dickerson, and of course, as I said on the RedLegNation.com, you know, I'm not a fully paid member of the Chris Dickerson fan club. I've been very critical of him. I think he's a fourth outfielder, really. A good fourth outfielder. I think he can contribute to a good team as a fourth outfielder. But he's not a guy that you're going to count on for on a championship team to be a starter. But his on-base percentage now is .375. And this guy can't even get off the bench. He can't even play. You know, last week, the last 2 weeks, when Taveras was hurt or loafing or whatever he was doing there, costing the Reds games, and then when he was out of the game, and they didn't put him on the disabled list but let him just sit around and watch for a little while, Chris Dickerson put on a display of defense in center field like nothing I've ever seen. Well, at least nothing I've seen in a while. I'm not going to say nothing I've ever seen. I've seen some good defensive center fielders in Cincinnati, going back to Eric Davis, then back to Cesar Geronimo. There have been some good ones. So I don't want to overstate the case for Chris Dickerson there. But he played well, played much better than Willie Taveras defensively, and he got on base. He's not going to hit for a whole lot of power, and he's not as good a player as he looked last September. But he's always gotten on base a little bit in the minor leagues, certainly better than Taveras has shown he's got an ability to do. Why not take Chris Dickerson? He's a left-hander. Willie Taveras is a right-hander. Why not platoon those guys, Dusty? Get both of them some playing time against, play Dickerson against right-handers, play Taveras against left-handers. They're both, I'd count on Dickerson if your center fielder has to bat leadoff, and usually that's the case until recently with Dusty. you know, I'm more comfortable with Dickerson than Tavares leading off. Let's just put it that way. Or Hairston. So, I don't know. That's sort of my thoughts on what's happening with the Reds here. I'm just confused at what Dusty Baker is thinking with respect to how he's putting that lineup together. But on the other hand, you've got to admit that he doesn't have a whole lot to work with either. So it's not like he's got a lineup full of all-stars and he's misusing them. If he were playing Jerry Hairston over, at third base over, whoever, Ryan Zimmerman or Evan Longoria, that'd be crazy. He's, he's maybe trying to do the best he can with what he's got, but I do have some qualms with the decisions he's made. But on the other hand, the Reds just took 2 of 3 from the Nationals, even though they looked terrible in taking those 2 of 3. Hey, it's 2 wins, and they're hanging around, and hope springs eternal that Edwin Encarnacion and Joey Votto can get back and the Reds can, stick around through August and September. Who knows? You never can tell. With this pitching, you never can tell. So, as I said, hope springs eternal. We're all hoping the Reds can stick around in it. Frankly, if the Reds end up at 500 or, somewhere thereabouts at the end of the year, whether they're in the race or not, frankly, I'll be pretty satisfied because it's better than I expected out of the team this year. I always felt like next year was the year the Reds are going to be really poised to break out and be a competitive team. So, a record somewhere around 500 would be fine for me. You wouldn't want to hear any complaints from Chad Dotson at that time. Well, you might. I like to complain, but I know nobody likes to listen to it, but I love to complain. Heck, what's the use of having a website to talk about the Reds every day if you can't complain every once in a while? All right, one other topic before we head over into Bill Lack's interview with Logan Parker. Again, Logan playing for the Carolina Mudcats. I'm hoping to get to watch him play, I hope. I'm going to see at least 2 games this coming weekend when they're playing against the Tennessee Smokies. But before we get into that, this week obviously was the Major League Baseball draft. And a very interesting draft for the Reds in a lot of different ways. Obviously they picked a guy named Matt Valeka, whose brother Chris Valeka had a rough start to the year this year, and he's injured now because he slammed his hand he broke it when he was irritated with himself, shall we say, for his play on the field. But his little brother got selected by the Reds. But up higher in the draft, the Reds took a guy named Mike Leake, right-handed pitcher out of Arizona State University, with their number one pick in the first round there. And there have been some people critical of this, some people very high on this pick. Frankly, I'm very satisfied with the pick of Mike Leake. I think it's a good choice by Chris Buckley, the scouting director, and Walt Jocke, the GM, the rest of that crew. It's a solid choice by the Reds. Leake is he's not a big guy. He's listed at 6 feet, but frankly, he's 5'10", 5'10 and a half. And so there have been a lot of comparisons to guys like Roy Oswalt, and Tim Hudson in terms of not being a real big guy. Usually they don't want these big, tall right-handers that are 6'4 and can throw 100 miles an hour. And he's not that guy. And I don't care that he's not that guy. Matter of fact, I love the fact that the Reds have sort of thought outside the box on this one, that they're not just doing what a lot of teams do and just refusing to consider anyone that is not the prototype that they want. I mean, this guy, 13-1 record this year, unbelievable ERA. And what I like the best about him is this guy has control. This guy knows where he wants the ball to go. I've seen him pitch a couple times for Arizona State, and he's really got an idea. Very, very poised, and I've been impressed by watching him even before the Reds selected him. Here's what the scouting report on him was for MajorLeagueBaseball.com. As a 6-foot righty, people may want to overlook Leake as a big-time pitching prospect, but they might be missing the boat. Yeah, I agree with that. He can throw 4 pitches for strikes, and his poise is off the charts. He may not be that big, but he's athletic, strong, and durable with an extremely efficient delivery. He's done nothing but perform with the Sun Devils, and whoever looks past his size could have themselves a steal. Yeah, I think that's a good scouting report from what I've been able to tell about Mike Leake. The part about him being able to throw 4 pitches for strikes, two of those pitches, according to the scouting reports, are Major League ready already. So, I mean, this guy is, not going to be too far away. He'll probably, I'm guessing, start in Sarasota. That seems to be what the Reds want to do, even with their college guys. But he might be in Carolina before long, and who knows? He could be sometime in 2010, could be in the hunt to be in the majors sometime, maybe the end of next year, middle to end of next year. So good pick. I'm pretty happy with that. No truth, number one, to the rumor that he is Kelly Leak's son. Kelly Leak, obviously the star player on the Bad News Bears. So no truth to that rumor. I know some of you guys had been speculating a little bit, and I don't appreciate you speculating about that, frankly. That's not fair to Mike Leak. he may be a Bad News Bear, but he's not that Bad News Bear side. Rez had a supplemental pick after round one. They took Brad Boxberger, right-handed pitcher out of the University of Southern California. Another college pitcher, and I like this. College pitchers, first two picks. I think that's just outstanding. I think that it's a good way to go. They actually picked another one in round three, so three of their top four picks were college pitchers. They're a little bit easier to project, sort of. They maybe got past some of the injury bug. You can tell they're developed a little bit more, a little more experience, a little closer to the majors. So I like the choice of these college pitchers. Boxberger, no, not Bruce Boxleitner, the 1970s and 80s actor. Brad Boxberger, here's his scouting report from MajorLeagueBaseball.com. He definitely improved his draft status with his first several starts. While many had seen him as a reliever in the future, he's emerged as a legitimate starting prospect with his performance. The key has been his ability to maintain his velocity deep into his starts, something he hadn't done in the past. And while his command is still a little bit inconsistent, it's better than it has been. Combine that with a full repertoire of pitches, and if Boxberger keeps it up, he'll seriously enter the first-round conversation, which, of course, he did. I like the fact that these two guys are major college pitchers, big-time programs, and, who knows if they're going to pan out or not, but they're solid selections. League, much better chance, I think, of panning out than Boxberger. Let's say the scouting reports are mixed on Boxberger, but I think he has a chance, a pretty good upside of having a chance of contributing with Cincinnati. In the second round, the Reds took Billy Hamilton, a shortstop out of Taylorsville High School in Mississippi. High school shortstop, I don't know, but this guy is evidently an unbelievable athlete. He's committed to play football at Mississippi State, so we'll see if the Reds can sign him away from that. Picking him in round two, you'd think that they expect that they're going to be able to sign him away from that, but he's a three-sport star in high school. He's supposedly got some holes in his swing, but his bat speed, strength, running speed make these scouts drool. So, and the Reds seem to think he can stick at shortstop as well, so don't know enough about him just yet to project, and high school players are impossible to project anyway. So, but the Reds took him awfully high, so they think pretty highly of him. College World Series is coming up this weekend. Be sure to watch Leak pitching for the Arizona State Sun Devils out there in Omaha, Nebraska, in the College World Series. Also, I expect every one of you to cheer for my alma mater, the University of Virginia, making their first ever appearance in the College World Series out there, playing against LSU this week in the first game. And really exciting for a UVA fan because, frankly, our basketball program's terrible. Our football program is terrible. Unless you like lacrosse or field hockey or soccer or one of those, it's not a whole lot to cheer for in terms of the bigger sports, I guess, at UVA. They're always fantastic in some of these other sports like lacrosse. And we're very proud of those programs. The tennis program's been outstanding lately. But baseball under Coach Brian O'Connor has been very good lately, and they've been rewarded a bunch of freshmen and sophomores this year to go all the way to the College World Series. It's been an amazing run, a lot of fun to watch. So I expect each of you to cheer for UVA, the Cavaliers, in the College World Series. All right, let's quit talking about the UVA. I know none of you care about them. Well, there's two or three of you that care because I always get the emails from you. But for the rest of you, let's go on and get into Bill Lack's interview with Logan Parker. Again, Logan, our spotlight player, who is with the playing in Double A at this time. First baseman by trade, but been playing some outfield lately. Bill's going to get his updates on everything that's going on there in Carolina. Take it away, Bill.
Hello out there in Red Leg Nation land. We are thrilled today to be checking in with one of our spotlight players, Logan Parker of the Double A Carolina Mudcats. Logan, welcome, and thanks for giving us your time on your off day. We appreciate it. How are you doing today?
Hey, thank you. I'm doing fine. Doing fine. Just enjoying the day off.
Well, since you said you're back home today after traveling in from Jacksonville, let's talk about Zebulon, North Carolina, and this is a Reds Double A team's first year in Zebulon. And look, tell us a little bit about the ballpark.
what most people would think would be a hitter's ballpark with the 309 feet down the line, but I've only seen two would be called cheap home runs over there, and anything else you get a hit at this park, you've earned it. It's one of the better pitcher's parks in the league, probably one of the better pitcher's parks I've ever played at, as far as any of the Florida State League fields go and anything. It just, I mean, the wind, it's just dead at night, and you have to absolutely crush a ball to get it out unless you hit it right down the line and left.
So the ball doesn't care. Is the air real heavy? Is that what you're saying?
I don't even know if it's the air's real heavy or anything, but during batting practice, the ball flies because the wind, I mean, you got like a 5 to 10 mile an hour wind that blows out, and then it's absolutely dead at game time.
Huh. What about, how are the facilities there, the clubhouse, that kind of thing?
The clubhouse is fine. It's nothing to write home about, but it's all right. It serves a purpose.
It's not Cobb Field, no. Huh?
Oh, no. Definitely better than that.
How have your crowds been there?
Besides Friday and a little bit Saturday, they're pretty much non-existent for the most part. You know, a lot of the times our radio guy said it had a lot to do with the Hurricanes being in the playoffs and things like that, but and school's still going on. But for the most part, the crowds aren't that good until Friday night. You get a good crowd because of fireworks, and Saturday you get a decent crowd.
Do the fans seem? Do you seem like, or do you believe that there is an adjustment for the fans with the change in organizations, or are they just Mudcat fans?
Yeah, I think they're just Mudcat fans. I don't think they cheer for any one organization.
So, and Zebulon's what, like 20 miles outside of Raleigh?
Yeah, 20, 25.
How are you enjoying the area down there?
The place we actually live is not bad. It's Knightsdale or something like that. But, I mean, it's a nice place. It's got all the restaurants you could ask for. You know, with our schedules, that's all you can really ask for is just a place to go eat every day.
So, yeah. What are the difficulty that players face when a team moves into a new city like this?
Nothing really, you know, because you know, it's not like I had been in Chattanooga before. So, I mean, I would be new regardless of wherever I'm at.
Right. So when you guys got there coming out of camp, they kind of steered you to places to live and that kind of thing?
Yeah, they set it up pretty much for us. Said, here's an apartment complex that'll, you know, kind of like similar to Dayton where they furnish apartments and you just kind of got to pay the rent. So, it was, I mean, this place takes care of you, and I guess they did it for the Marlins in the past.
Oh, okay. So let's talk about your season so far. Right now your numbers are 254, 360, 385. Are you happy with your numbers right now?
I was happy with the way I started. I felt like I got off to an above-average start for what I usually do, numbers-wise. And I had the same average May that I have every year, where everything just plummets for whatever reason. And right about the time I started getting hot and starting to get into a good feel of things again, the playing time decreased for obvious reasons, which I understand. But numbers-wise, I'm not... The numbers are so deceiving, batting average-wise, for a lot of guys right now in our squad, because we've had, personally, I can count four balls that I would easily call doubles down the first base line. That guys just play you different, and the first baseman's playing on top of the line, so it's no longer a double, it's an out. And, I mean, I could even count on fingers, hands, toes, anything, the number of balls I've lined out. Which is, I mean, obviously that way for everybody, but that's a big change I've noticed from A ball to double A is the positioning of the defense. It seems like everywhere you hit a ball, you hit it hard, somebody's right there.
So it sounds like you're happy with the way you're striking a ball, but you're also kind of hitting in some bad luck.
Yeah, I've run into a lot of bad luck, which I'm saying everyone has. Everybody on our team has. We've all squared balls up, but yeah, I mean, I'm happy with the way it's coming back or after a slow May.
Yeah. Physically, you're feeling pretty good?
I had a little bit of shoulder problem. Just got, I mean, the same old things. It was just kind of locking up on me for a while. But, yeah, it feels good now. So I felt good for 2 weeks, probably.
Was this the shoulder you hurt in Dayton?
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah. Well, when we talked in the offseason, we talked about the Reds drafting Alonzo and how it seemed to change your position with the future with the ball club. And now he's on your team. And the weekend before he was promoted, you started two games in the outfield. Were you forewarned about this move to the outfield or that he was coming up or anything like that?
Well, I was told that I was going to be playing a lot more outfield and that they wanted me to do early work and things before batting practice out there. And I said, well, does this mean I'm going to play outfield more? And they said, yeah. And I said, a lot more? And they just kind of smiled and said, yeah. So I knew right then that he would have been coming up. And then the day before he got there was a day game. I got called to the manager's office, and he gave me a warning. He just gave me a heads up and said, I feel like you deserve to know this, but he's going to come up, and I'll get you in there as much as I can. So,
how do you feel out there in the outfield? How are you doing defensively out there?
Well, left field is coming a lot more naturally and easy than right field. Right field I still struggle with, just the way the ball comes off the bat. And to the average person, they probably think it's the same, but it couldn't be any more opposite. But I would say left field's where I enjoy playing more in the outfield, but right field, I mean, any chance I get in there, I don't even care where it's at.
Yeah.
If I'm high enough.
It seems like you've become part of like an outfield rotation, and it's kind of you and Shane Henry, Shane or Sean Henry. And with almost no DH in this league most of the time, it seems. When was the last time you were in this kind of position where you were fighting for playing time?
My junior year of high school, I guess.
Wow.
I mean, it's been a while. And that's part of it once you start getting into pro balls, because, you know, when you get drafted, you were – for the most part, everybody who got drafted that year was that college team's premier player. I mean, you were the best player on that team, and everybody was there, you know, to watch you. And then you get drafted, and you're right beside 24 other kids who are the same way. So, I mean, now that we're in Double A, Henry's a good player. He's swinging the bat well. So, David Bell's in a really tough position, trying to get all of us in there at the same time. And it's virtually impossible right now because everybody's swinging the bat well, and any lineup he puts out there seems to be the right one right now. So he's in a tough spot. And but for the most part, I've never been in this situation. I'm just trying to make the most of it.
So is the biggest adjustment to this just a mental adjustment for you? You know, you just have to be ready at the drop of a hat to go up if you're only going to get one at bat a game, say, you know, if you're not starting a certain night. Is it a different mindset that you have to adjust to?
I was telling somebody yesterday, when I was pinch hitting early in the year when I was playing all the time and I'd get a pinch hit off the bench, I'd get so amped up for the pinch hit and sit there and stretch the whole inning before and just try to get really focused. And it didn't work for me. It just made me too nervous. I got too excited. But, lately I've had more success doing it just by sitting there on the bench and acting like I'm still sitting on the bench, just trying to stay real tired and real almost bored. And when I'm called upon, I go up there and just square the ball up a lot better. So, I mean, the mindset, yeah. I mean, you just got to know. I may be a part of a double switch later on in the game where I may get a pinch hit. But yeah, I mean, our manager tries to give us a heads up when we're going to play that day. You know, the day before, and he'll tell us, hey, you're going to start tomorrow. So it's easier that way.
When you do, you know, when he comes down and tells you, you're going to bat this inning, and you go up to the plate as a pinch hitter, do you have to be careful not to press or be over anxious and to keep your normal hitting approach? You know, can you try to do too much? You know, can you be trying to hit a three-run homer, you know, when there's nobody on base?
Oh, yeah. Because you feel when you get called upon to pinch hit, a lot of times I'm one of the last guys to do it off our squad because, you know, I can play other positions where if you needed a double switch, He could use me to go in the outfield, or he could put me in the infield. So I'm one of the last couple of guys, so when I'm called upon to pinch hit, it's usually a one-run game or a tie game, and I feel like that's almost what I'm called upon to do. I'm not called upon to hit a flap single somewhere. I'm called upon to drive along the gap or hit one out. So, yeah, it's easy to get in and try to do too much. But, I mean, that's the battle that we all fight every time you get in there.
Yeah, so you really have to battle to make sure that you keep your normal hitting approach at the plate.
Yeah, definitely.
This change in your role from being an everyday guy to right now kind of fighting for playing time, does this change the way you prepare every day?
Not really. I mean, I still go and do everything as early as I can and just have fun with it. That's the only thing that I'm focusing on more now. Just have a lot more fun when I do get in there, not to stress out about it, because it doesn't seem like it's a matter of, okay, if you're in there today and you go 4-for-4, you're going to be in there tomorrow. That's not really how it works. Because my first night that I played the outfield, I was 2-for-5 with a home run, and the next night I wasn't playing. I didn't play for 3 days after that. So it doesn't really matter.
I just go
and have fun. And, you know, I work more now than I did when I played every day, because I'm working in the outfield for early work, and then I go during batting practice and take fly balls, and then go to first and take ground balls. So I'm just all over the field now. And now with right field mixed in, I've got 3 positions I'm trying to cover during the matter of 3 groups of batting practice. So it's fun. I have a good time with it.
David Bell's the manager down there, right? Who's your hitting instructor down there?
Ryan Jackson.
Is his philosophy any different than guys you've dealt with in the past?
No, I had him. He was my guy last year in Sarasota, so I've worked with him.
Okay.
Yeah, I've worked with him in the past. So, no, we've got a good relationship.
So, basically, what you're saying is even if you know you're not starting that day, you still have to come to the ballpark and be prepared in the same way, even if it's going to be for 1 at bat instead of 5, right?
Right. And I've always said that when I play every day and then you get that day off, you know, a lot of people kind of relax on that day off. I think that I always had a talk with Donnie Scott about it when he was my manager, that on that day off, get more work done during the early work. Work hard, take more ground balls, because you can relax a little bit during the game, catch a little bit of a breather. During the game, you don't have to worry about that, so... I almost work harder.
I think we talked in the off season. You were saying that you changed the way you prepared, and it helped you break some bad habits that you picked up. Is this kind of the same thought?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Are you enjoying Carolina? Do you like does the area seem nice? Is it a nice place to play?
After going to Chattanooga, I would much rather prefer to play there.
Yeah.
Obviously, I mean, that place has better fan support. The ballpark's nicer. The ball absolutely flies out of place. It's just another Dayton all over again.
Really?
As far as the ball flying. Yeah, the ball jumps out of there.
The other thing...
The area here is nice. I mean, the people are nice. The area is nice.
The other thing I heard about Chattanooga is in terms of the Southern League, it's a lot nicer, easier for traveling.
Yeah, they said 2 to 3 hours from everything.
Yeah.
And our shortest one is on paper is 6 or 6.5 or something, and it takes every trip it's taken us at least 7 to 7.5 hours.
There aren't any short trips in that league, are there?
No, not for us.
I mean, you've been over to Montgomery, right? Is that the furthest trip?
We haven't been to Montgomery. We've been to Mobile, and that's our furthest trip.
And how long was that?
Oh, man, that was the first trip of the year.
Forever?
11 hours, 10, 11.
Oh, my, that's like when you're in Billings.
Yeah, and at least in Billings, we would get off the bus and have a day off the next day for the most part. But here, I mean, you get off that bus, you're playing the next morning. We got in at 8 or 9 o'clock that morning, and then you play the next day.
You mentioned earlier that one of the differences that you've seen in the Southern League, you know, playing in Double A compared to where you played last year is the defensive positioning. What other differences have you seen?
Nothing really. I mean, the pitching's almost the same. A little bit more off-speed pitches and hitters count, 2-0 and 3-1. Counts like that, pitchers will, try to throw a change up here and there, but for the most part, everything's pretty much the same. It's just, you got guys, it seems like there's 13 guys playing defense every day, so.
Yeah, so you haven't seen a dramatic increase in the talent level. It's just a normal ramping up going from one level to another?
Yeah, and a lot of times we've played against these guys before.
Sure.
So we've come up, like I play against them in Dayton and Sarasota and again here. So a lot of guys we know real well.
Your team's been playing pretty well. You guys have been on a hot streak.
Yeah, we got hot.
Would you win 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 11 or something like that?
Yeah, our pitching came together and then hitting, it just got extremely hot. And our bullpen got, a couple of changes in the bullpen. We got that shirt up, so we got a tough squad now.
It seemed like just looking at the transactions and thing, like you had some problems with starting pitching because they brought a couple of guys in from outside the organization, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so. I know they brought Cochran in.
And there was another guy before that, wasn't there? And he wasn't there long. I think he made one or two starts, and then I think they released him.
Yeah, Kyle Appleton.
Yeah,
he was with Birmingham. He was released by Birmingham, and we needed the lefty out of the pen. And had, I guess, heard some good things about him. He's got a good arm. He just ran into some bad luck with us.
Yeah.
With just a little bit of control issues. But
you got two teammates down there that are having pretty daggone good offensive years in Frazier and Heisey.
Yeah, Heisey's unbelievable. I don't know. He's come so far since I saw him in Billings that first year. He's a completely different ball player. It's unbelievable. Fun to watch.
Yeah, he's really having an incredible year. One last thing before we sign off. Your old high school buddy's having a heck of a first year with the Reds. You want to give us any thoughts on Danny Herrera?
I mean, the only thing I can say is people really just needed to see it and believe it for themselves that a kid 5'6" could get somebody out at the major league level with the stuff that he's got. And when he first went up there last year, there was a lot of critics saying, why is this guy here and not some of these other fireballers that we've got in the bullpen in Louisville? We should bring those guys up ahead of him. But, I guess it's finally paying off. People are finally seeing what I knew he had. So I'm obviously very excited for him and wishing nothing but the best. I talk to him quite often, and he seems to be enjoying it, so.
Yeah, he's done real well. The only thing my wife says all the time when she sees him on television is he's so little, he looks like he's wearing his dad's uniform.
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway, that's all we have today. And as always, Logan, we really appreciate your time. And hopefully we can talk again soon.
Yeah, definitely.
All righty. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you. Have a good
one. All right.
All right, thanks a lot to Logan Parker, and certainly thanks to Bill Lack as well for setting up that interview, and appreciate always Logan giving us a few minutes of his time. Impressive young man, and we're certainly wishing him all the best as he faces those challenges there in AA and tries to make that step forward. He's close, if he can get it all together. So we're certainly rooting for Logan Parker, and I'll be there cheering for him next week. As well as another one of our editors at Red Leg Nation. We'll be there watching and cheering on Logan Parker and the rest of the Carolina Mudcats as they play the Tennessee Smokies. All right, that's enough. I know you're sick of listening to my voice, and frankly, I'm tired of talking to you too. So let's get out of here. Thanks, though, in all seriousness for joining us. And if you got any comments, suggestions, concerns, anything, radio@redlegnation.com is where to send those. If you've not already done this, I urge you every week, and it's really funny to watch the numbers go up every week, but go subscribe to the podcast at iTunes. It's the best way to ensure you're not going to miss any of these episodes of Red Leg Nation Radio. And of course, you can use the Red Leg Nation Radio tab at the top of redlegnation.com to get all the updates, information, and past episodes. Thanks again to every one of you out there in the nation. This is Chad Dotson saying so long.